It's time for Wine Chat with Cal. As it warms up and daylight savings kicks in, it's the perfect time to enjoy a glass of wine in the sunshine. And what could be better than a refreshing chilled red? But who decides that a red gets to be chilled? Is there actually anything special about the grapes or the winemaking that go into the bottle, or is it a case of whacking it in the fridge? To answer this and more, we are joined by Cal Lee on the line. Cal, how the hell are you?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. I'm really good.
Excellent. I was going to make a white wine in the sun joke, but it's red wine today, so I'm gonna.
Yeah. No. That'll be in December. We'll do the white wine.
I'm banking it.
Yeah. Okay. Just.
This is going to be the longest Chekhov's joke in possibly radio history. Folks, remember this moment. Okay.
Yeah.
So, what makes a red suitable for chilling, or is it just whatever you got, whack it in the fridge?
Yeah, I mean, like, at the end of the day, it's the fact that you put it in the fridge for.
Brilliant.
Like,
thanks
half
for coming
an hour
on, Cal. It's been really great talking.
Yeah, I know. When we're done. I think there's sort of this interesting thing that sort of happens where the way in which sort of like things are seen on menus or things are sort of like structured in wine lists or by sommeliers or wine professionals is that, you know, we talk about chilled reds as if that is a thing that is like self-evident in the wine. But really, and this is sort of a thing that I think Australians or like particularly New South Wales people are getting more into. Is realizing that it's like actually a lot of the red wine we serve way too warm. And when you sort of start looking at the European counterparts, there are quite a lot of red wines that get served in that sort of 10 degrees to 14 degrees kind of bracket that aren't even necessarily chilled reds. That's just the serving temperature that you would serve them at kind of thing. But that is to say that like, what we're usually looking for in a wine to make it suitable for chilling is that we don't want it to be too bitter, because when you make it colder, that's going to become a little bit more obvious. We're usually looking for stuff that's a little bit lower in alcohol and lower in like body, just because, you know, they tend to be a bit more refreshing. And we're usually looking for something with a decent amount of acidity, because once again, that acidity is going to become a lot... not more pronounced, but sort of more into focus as we sort of drop those temperatures. And you're going to start losing a lot of those sort of like softer, richer aromatic profiles that we sort of associate with things like, you know, a big Cabernet or a big Shiraz. And we're going to sort of move it back into things that we get quite used to in white wines, which are sort of like these more refreshing acidities and these things that are, you know, small amounts of texture that become quite obvious. Because they sort of lose more of the background stuff that can hide them in a conventional room temperature wine.
Right. And so, what's the difference between rosé and a chilled red?
Yeah, the way I sort of like to think about it is that like rosé is almost a subcategory of chilled red. And this is a thing that I think a lot of people have a lot of different opinions on it. Like, you know, you hear the joke going around of just like, oh, well, you know, a rosé becomes a chilled red when you want to make $5 more a bottle. but it's typically rosé is specifically relating to the fact that you've used red wine grapes and you've let them hang out for a very, very short amount of time on skin, just enough to sort of blush. You can't, I'm doing air quotes around the word blush, but you know. just can't tell that.
Yeah, it is an audio only format.
It's an audio only performance. we then sort of blush the rosé, and then it has that very light hint. And then you sort of get this nebulous zone, which is sort of multiple days, stuff that's less than a week, stuff that's sort of like lower extraction methods. Where you are still technically making a rosé, but it tends to be a lot richer in color. They tend to have a lot more structure to them. And this is sort of when I would argue that what you're actually making is a chilled red. You just might be marketing it as a rosé. You might be positioning it as a rosé in the rest of your winemaking decisions, but there's nothing particularly like specific between those sort of two ways of making wine. There's also tons of other ways you can make a chilled red, you know. You see people using white wine juice. You see people doing sort of like Sanier stuff, which basically means that as soon as you've started to process the grapes, you're taking all the juice that's sitting on the grapes just to let them hang out dry. And then you're using that juice which is basically white wine juice at that point, and then either adding that back in later or blending that in with another component. Or you just get people who are basically, you know, letting that thing sort of ferment like a regular red wine and just, you know, serving it chilled.
Okay, and so then what grapes are used in making chilled reds?
I mean, in the New World, like Australia and sort of that kind of place, we're seeing pretty much everything get used these days. The sort of big traditional grapes in this space was Gamay. It's the main grape of Beaujolais. Beaujolais has what they call the Beaujolais Nouveau Festival, which is sort of the first wine release in the European vintage. So, you know, they're harvesting it just before the start of October and bottling it and releasing it in November. And it's, you know, it's fizzy, it's cold, it's fresh and it's bright and it tastes like Ribena and it's delicious, but like not a particularly sophisticated wine. But by using the same sort of techniques that they used to make these wines, Australians have found that we can do stuff like harvesting, you know, Barossa Shiraz, which is traditionally this really like big, quite structured, heavy, hard-hitting red wine grape. Harvesting that a little bit earlier, treating that a little bit more gently, and you can then get these sort of like 12.5%, 12%, like more classically sort of chilled red style wines, just by treating those same grapes a little bit differently and sort of planning that actual process out from the pre-picking stage to, you know, making sure you actually sort of know what products you're going to make along the way.
And is there a specific technique to the winemaking of chilled reds?
Yeah, there's two things that I would say, not used in every single chilled red, but I would say it would be used in most of them. And that is some sort of either whole bunch or carbonic maceration. Check out the episode we did on whole bunch if you want a bit more information about that. But basically, that's where you get a lot of these like really bright red confectionery aromatics from. It gets you a lot of color extraction without giving you tannin extraction, which is awesome if you want to have something that has a really brilliant color, but isn't going to have that sort of bitterness and astringency that we're trying to avoid because we're serving the wine at a lower temperature. And the other thing that you'll see a lot of is some sort of cold stability in the wine. And what we mean by that is basically, if you just get freshly fermented grape juice, put it in a bottle, put it in the fridge, just from having that change in temperature, a bunch of things are going to fall out of that solution and you're going to get this weird, murky thing. You might get some crystallization in there, all sorts of things. Check out the episode on haze and wine for more information on this. But, you know, they usually will go through some sort of cold stability process. That might be like a cold soak early in the fermentation. That might be like a crash settle where basically you're running it through like a -4-degree chiller unit just to strip everything out pre-fermentation to sort of get you a really, really clean product throughout that entire process. Or it might even just be something as simple as letting that tank hang out in a cool room before it goes to bottling, just to make sure that anything that might be left in there that would settle out in the bottle is settled out beforehand.
Wonderful. Okay, so I suppose a question what I'd like to ask you is if there's anyone, if people listening to take one thing away from this chilled red conversation, what's something that they should take away from it when they're buying?
This is actually a thing that I get a little bit of a pet peeve about. Your chilled red probably shouldn't be as cold as your white wine. I think it's actually, I hadn't worked into the script, but like I think it's actually an important thing to talk about is that your white wine ideally should be about 4 degrees. Even that might be a little too cold for something like a Chardonnay. But you sort of want to have your chilled red in that sort of like 8 to 10, 10 to 12 sort of area, because you will still get all those beautiful sort of like soft, refreshing, like, you know, cool afternoon kind of stuff with it. But having it any colder than that really will close up that wine, and you're going to really lose out on a lot of like the aromatics and the more pleasurable parts of that experience. And I sort of think about it this way, where it's like, you know, if you're at a picnic and you've got the bottle in the esky, just take it out of the esky. Like it'll be fine. It won't go anywhere, you know. And if it starts to get too warm, just put it back in the esky. And yeah, I guess that's the one thing I sort of want to impart to the listeners today.
There you go. There's your cold tip, actually. I would say not hot tip, cold tip. There you go. Brilliant. And what are you drinking this week, Carl?
Drinking chilled red.
Of course.
I'm drinking a lot of chilled red, actually. but just, I'm going to shout
bucket
out
loads of it. Just absolutely.
Just bucket load, mate. By the pint. no, but I'm going to shout out one in particular. This is going to be the Little Red. By Bink. This thing is what are we in the industry called? Party juice. It is like highlighter pink. It is delicious. It is like super crunchy, great acidity, really bright, really fresh. It is just like, you know, I'm not going to say it's a particularly sophisticated wine, but, you know, it's something that's delicious. That I think it's really fun to enjoy with a few mates, especially if you can get some sunshine and get a little, you know, shakoots in there, you know, all that good stuff.
All the nice summery, spring summery goodness that you like.
That's it.
Brilliant. All right, Cal, thank you so much for joining us this week. And what's on the cards for next week?
Well, I believe we've got a date with Malta.
We do have a date with Malta. Brilliant.
Stay tuned for that.
And do you have another event coming up?
I do.
Wow.
So Peter from Sabi Wabi up in the Hunter is going to be coming down next Wednesday, which is the 8th of October. I'm pretty sure that's right. We're going to be pouring some wines at the Hive Bar, going through that. Peter is an awesome winemaker, and this vintage like is basically just three expressions of Semillon and two expressions of Shiraz, both in the Hunter, but all made in really, really different, unique, and quite compelling styles. And I think anyone that sort of has maybe overlooked some of the wines of the Hunter, I think this would actually be a really great experience, because I think Peter's doing some really, really interesting things and sort of trying to move the region in a bit more of a contemporary drinking style.
Lovely. Well, check that out, guys. Where can people find out more about that, Cal?
You can go to thehivebar.com.au, or you can check out the Hive Bar Instagram or my Instagram, which will be in the episode description.
Easy peasy. Wonderful. Cal, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
I was just about to say the same thing. One
word. Yeah, no, I got in there for you.
Far out. just slip right in.
Yeah.
No, catch up with you next week.
For sure, mate. Looking forward to it.